Mr. Shaw, Reel 4. We're talking about when you joined HMS Resolution in July 1938 at Devonport. And you mentioned your toolkit. Now, what I wanted to know is, where did this come from and roughly what was in it? It might be difficult to say exactly what was in it.
Well, it was supplied by the Navy. You had a toolbox, and then I'm going to say this from memory, actually, we had a...
And everybody, when it had been supplied, right at the start, when you went to St. Mary's, to Fiskard, or was it later? When you qualified.
Let me see now, wait a minute, you got me there. I think it was later, actually. I'm not sure.
When you qualified.
Yeah, I think so.
So what was in it?
Well, there was a 12-inch steel rule, a chalk line and reel that I was telling you about just now, was that a 2-pound hammer? Yeah, there weren't many things, but there were more. I'm just trying to think. A set of feelers.
What's feelers? Sorry.
Feelers are, if you're want to measure the space between, say, a joint, say a metal joint, say two metal joints. And a feeler is a metal, and it ranges from sometimes one thousandth of an inch thick. And it's in the shape, when you open it up, it's in the shape of a fan, but each one. And you can push it, how can I describe it?
So you push it into.
You push it in to get.
Into a gap.
Yeah, for measure, that's right, measuring a gap. I mean, if you had to do a job, if it was a. And you had to make sure that the job was correct to within two thousandths of an inch, and you get your feelers out to check it. You with me? A little set of metal feelers, and they use. And also, I think we had a thread gauge was a similar thing in a way, but you were measuring the threads, you know, the thread on a screw, different types of those. I think we have one of those, but I'm not 100% sure. But and there must have been other a couple of chisels, you know.
You didn't have that much in.
We didn't have as many tools as a fitter and turner would. We weren't supplied with as many because they have different sort of different trade. You see. Chisels for knocking things like hammer. Well, they would have that as well anyway. See, they'd have all sorts of other things which we'd. Oh, for instance, a fitter and turner would probably have been issued with a micrometer, whereas we weren't. You know what I mean? Different things like that. So that there may be more, but I can't.
Now, what were your first impressions of the Resolution? It was a big 15-inch gun battleship, wasn't it?
Well, we just thought that, you know, a great big ship, battleship, and at that age you don't know any difference, really. And there were 18 boilers, three boiler rooms, with six boilers in huge, you know, in each boiler, A, B and C, and... We started off as the fifth class. This is where we started off doing our watchkeeping in the boiler rooms, you see.
Well, let's first look at your mess deck, I think, before we go on to
the...
Yeah, it's where the ERA mess...
ERA's mess.
Well, could you describe it? I mean, were you all in together, all the ERAs, or...?
Yeah, all the chiefs and ERAs, and I'm just trying to think how many were there. There were 30-something, I think. There were six chiefs. And there were six of us anyway when we joined, so that's 12. Yeah, there were over 30. And you all nearly all sat in order of seniority. You know, they get the senior chief would be up there. He'd be the president of the mess. And then opposite him would be the next senior. And then and those six would be on that table. And then they got round to the rubbish. That was us. It's all the young ones. And we sat anywhere, as long as we were on that table, you know what I mean?
Oh, could you sort of describe the mess, you know, what it looked like and what space you had in it?
When we first joined, we didn't have any space in it. We were allocated, sling our hammocks in all sorts of peculiar corners outside the mess where there's great big fat, as long as there was enough space to sling a hammock from there to there, we couldn't... We couldn't get in the mess to start with. And I don't think... I was on the resolution roughly 2 years. And I can't remember ever having a hammock in the mess, to be quite honest.
Was it the first time you'd had hammocks?
Yeah.
What did you think of them?
Oh, well, that was another thing, too, that you had everybody in stitches until they got fed up with it. When we came back from leave, had to... When we finished our training and came back into the barracks, and our position was, there was a big billiard table below the, and I don't know if you've ever seen a hammock slung up. Well, I could never get the ropes right. And I got in this hammock, and all of a sudden you hear zip, 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 and I just managed to leap out onto the billiard table before the hammock collapsed. Well, this was all right to start with. Everybody was highly amused. But as it went on for ages and ages, they begin to get a bit irritable. They want to go to sleep, you see. So in the end, the chap next to me had to get up and do it. I did it all right eventually. But at the start, I couldn't get... The knots were all slipping. So this is what happened to me, expert.
And how comfortable was it for you?
Well, difficult to say. We just got used to it eventually. I don't know whether they accept it now, but we accepted it all. And... Well, we just took it for granted. That was it, and that's all there was to it.
Did you have a locker at all on the mess deck? I mean, you didn't have anywhere to...
Ah, no. Right, we must have had... Where did we have a locker on the resolution? Yeah, I think we did. I think we did have a space to stow our gear, but for the life of me, I can't picture it now. But I think we did have that in the mess. And...
Well, tell me about the boiler rooms and your duties in the boiler rooms and the engine rooms.
Well, we all started off mainly as we had to keep watches in the boiler room, but not we weren't on our own. There was usually a chief stoker down there. He was the one in charge, but we were down there just to check that. The oil levels in the fans that were running were correct, and if they needed oil in, we'd put it in. Or when the sprayer, they had oil sprayers, you see, and when some of those got choked up, that was our job then to fix them. And of course, they were red hot at the time, so we had to wear gloves. And we also, as we were still under training, you're still under training all the time, we had to sort of trace different systems, oil systems, water systems, steam systems, find out where different valves were, you know, emergency valves and so forth, so on, up there and in the bilges and, you know, all this, and that was all part of it. And you were on watch for 4 hours. And
how did the relationship between you and the chief stokers, I'm not quite sure, where's the line go between... senior stokers, chief petty officer stokers, and ERAs,
well,
junior ERAs.
Yeah, but we were only fifth class ERA. So a chief stoker, he was a chief petty officer, so he had the authority over us. He was in charge of the watch anyway, you see. So he could order us around if he wanted, and some of them did. you know, took advantage of it. It was like everything else. Some of them were all right, some of them weren't. But they were in charge. The chief stoker was in charge. That was it. And
what was it they specialised in? That they didn't have the engineering training?
No, well, they were making sure that the boiler was operating at the correct pressure, the steam pressure was all right, and that the fans were running correctly so that you weren't getting lots and lots of smoke coming out of the, and all this business. In other words, they were looking after and the actual boiler and the transmission of the steam, you see. So that was their job. If anything went wrong mechanically, they'd send for one of us, or if it was during the daytime, one of the ERAs, or if it was an electrical fault, one of the electricians, or, you know what I mean, that's it. But they were just in charge of the... They were the ones who would say to the stoker, tell the stoker to put another sprayer on, or take that one off, you know, be standing in all this business. They were in charge of that bit.
What was it like in the engine rooms? How big were they? I mean, people haven't seen the inside of battleships then.
No. Well...
Can you give us a sort of idea of what they and the boiler rooms? Cause people also don't know the difference between engine rooms and boiler rooms, you know.
Well, the boiler room, let me see now, see if I can give you an idea. From the main deck down to the boiler room, they had a lift, you know, a lift, but it very often broke down. One didn't operate very, very well to the boiler rooms. But it operated quite well to the engine room because the engineer commander went down there occasionally, so they made sure that the lift was all right. Well, it's huge. I can't describe it really. I'm just trying to think. Let me see now. Wait a minute. Let me take that. Three boilers, one side. I should imagine the. Yeah, from the back window there to that one, that would be about the width of the three boilers. Hardly any space in between.
So about them. 22 yards or so.
Yeah, I'm only guessing there because the memory's...
That's all right.
Although I can picture the scene, funnily enough, and they were back to back. So they had six boilers, and then there were three boiler rooms like that, as I said, A, B and C. And when you were doing full speed, which was 22 knots, the resolution, which we very rarely did, of course all the 18 boilers were on, and every sprayer on, you with me? One of the few times we did that was when we went...
I'll come to that. How did the engines rooms and the boilers, I mean... Can you just explain how the ship worked, the boiler rooms and the engines, how it went from the oil fuel to the ship going?
Well, you'd have the water in the... There'd be three drums, huge drums. The top drum was called the steam drum, although that obviously had water in, and the two bottom ones had the water in. And that's where the tubes connected, triangular, you see. Right, now, so you had the big furnace... The sprayers on, oil sprayers, and that would heat the water up, and then the steam, and then in those days it was just ordinary, what they call wet, saturated steam, wet. And later on they had superheated steam, where it was dry steam, but that's another. Anyway, and so the steam would be going through great big pipes about that much in diameter.
Ooh, 12-inch more, 18-inch.
Yeah, and with valves on, huge valves. You had to have a great big wheel spanner, you know, big as me practically, or some. Anyway, that would go through into the engine room and into the turbines, eventually, in the engine room, which were driving the steam's driving the turbines, and that was driving the shafts, you see, and that's basically, you know, simple...
And the shaft turned the propeller.
That's it. And that's it. And that's how it operated. And you had them on the resolution. We had four shafts, four propellers, and you had three engine rooms. You had what they called the centre engine room, which was the main one, and then the two wing engine rooms. And when the ship was going in and out of harbour, Everybody was down, well, not everybody, all the engineer commander, the senior engineer, the officer of the watch, the chief ERA of the watch, the centre engine room, you see. Because that was laid down for the Admiralty Fleet orders, you see. And the other wing one of the shafts there, and there'd be somebody there, but they'd just been making sure that the shaft was going round all right and it wasn't overheating anywhere, etc., etc., etc. But the main one would be the centre engine room. And you'd have the throttles on there, huge throttles, you know. They'd be standing an ERA or usually on each throttle, and you'd get the order from the bridge, so many revolutions or slow ahead or something, and you'd open the throttle slowly, and that was it. And you'd have an astern one, if you went astern, which wasn't very often because everybody got in a panic then. You have to shut the other one as quickly as you can and open the other one, because you can imagine a huge battleship. Anyway, so that's basically the idea.
Now, what about when you joined the ship, about some kind of daily routine? And I know you'd be on watch. Now, when you joined her, that she was refitting, I believe. But what was the basic routine aboard ship for you?
Well, the basic routine to start with, for most of the time, was that we were doing what they called auxiliary watchkeeping.
Well, what was that?
Well, the ship wasn't at sea, but they still had to have this steam and to provide the fuel, the power rather, for the electricity, etc., 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 etc. So we, six of us there were, we were doing this watchkeeping business, and it worked like this. Now, right, we start off, you go and watch at 8 o'clock in the morning, come off at 12 noon, that's 4 hours. Then you have 4 hours off, so you're on again at 4, and you come off at 8, that's both the dog watches, you see. Then you're off for 4 hours again, and you're on at midnight until 4 a.m. So you've done 12 hours in that 24. Well, then you're off until noon. You've got a 24 hours off. And then the next time you start is 12 o'clock on the day after. So it's from noon until 4, then from 8 until 12, and then from 4 until 8. So in actual fact, what you've done is 12, 20... You've done the same as though you've been on the normal routine, the three-watch business, but you've done 12 hours out of 24, and then you do another 12 hours out of 24, but in between time, you've got a day off. Roughly, that's the rough idea.
And what would you, so on duty, you've said what you'd be doing, but what would you do when you were off duty?
Well, when you're off duty, now, when we were allowed to go ashore, we were allowed to go ashore at noon, I think. So,
But did you have any other duties when you were off watch? I mean,
well, yeah, because you had to. You had one of the engineer officers, and usually one of the young ones, was in charge of what they call your, for the lack of a better word, schooling. So that he was responsible for making sure that you traced different systems on the battleship, and you can imagine what that was like on a battleship, you know, different lines from the boiler room to the engine room, and knowing about the refrigerating machinery, and, you know, different people would take you for that sort of thing. The dynamos, there were diesel dynamos, turbo dynamos, there'd be another engineer officer taking you around, showing you how they work, and then you would be questioned on that sort of thing afterwards. Well, you were doing this as part of the time of your day off as well, you see. And then you'd be, as I say, tested on this afterwards to see whether you knew what you were talking about. And you had to draw the different lines, fuel systems and so forth and so on, how to oil ship, even though it wasn't really your part of the, it wasn't really your job, but you had to know something about it, and different things like that. But you had different, usually engineer officers, who were in charge of these particular departments, showing you how they worked. For instance, the diesel dynamo, you'd have the officer in charge come down, and then very often he'd hand you over to, it'd be either a senior, very senior ERA or something, and say, well, show him how this works, and how it's done. And this is what would be happening between, in your spare time, which was hardly any, but anyway, this is what happened. And then, of course, when you went to sea, then you'd revert to three watches then, and that's when you split the dogs. If you started, for instance, say, at 12 o'clock noon, or start in the morning again, say you were doing from 8 o'clock until 12, see, well then the next watch would be obviously from, not you wouldn't do it, but the next watch would be from 12 to 4, then after that would be from 4 to 6, and then 6 to 8,
the dog watches,
the dog watches, you see. And but you'd be three watches then, so you'd be doing 8 hours out of the 24, or actually you wouldn't, you're doing two sixes and a 12, but it works at an average of 8 in 24. And whereas that one works out the same, but
longer, the auxiliary watch. Yeah. Well, I mean, how did you fit in aboard ship? How did you get on with the stokers generally?
All right. When you're young, I mean, we're only what? Average age, 20. And most of the stokers were quite young as well, so we got on all right, usually. I mean, not 100%, but most of the time we got on all right.
Were any of them jealous? I mean, you mentioned some jealousy from the instructors.
Not really then, no, not to, it was usually when they got a bit older, and like when they got the rank of very often petty officer or leading hand, that they got a bit sort of, you know, why should you get promoted in 2 years and I've got to wait 10 years or something? You know what I mean? That sort of idea.
Now, what about the seaman ratings? You know that.
Well, we didn't have a lot to do with the. I mean, the only time, I suppose, the main time I had anything to do with the seaman was I was, at the time on the resolution, I was the only one in the engine room branch who was chosen for the ship's football team.
I'll come back to, but other than that,
you saw them occasionally, but didn't really.
There's some other things about life. What was the food like, and what was the messing system on board the resolution?
Well, we had a messman. And it was always one of your own branch, but it was usually a stoker, and it's usually one of the old stokers who'd given up hope of. But also, usually a very reliable one, and he would collect the food dinner time. It mainly.
Where from?
The galley. The galley.
The kitchens would prepare it. There was no cook of the
That's
mess.
That's right. No. The kitchens would prepare, or the galleys, as we call it. And they collect it from there, and he'd bring it into the mess, and it'd all be the great big urn full of soup and all the rest of it, and then collect the dinners, and he would do that, and we'd just sit down, and we'd go up to the, he'd have a, what you call a pantry, and we'd just go up to collect it. He wouldn't sort of wait on you, but you'd go up to the pantry, and then if it's soup you wanted, he'd ladle the soup out and away you go, and that was it.
And what food did you get? Did it differ much from what you'd had at Chatham?
Not really, you know, basically fairly similar. It was, as I said just now, the soup was probably the mainstay. And of course the people I didn't drink my chutter rum for years.
But with the food, would you buy extras as a mess? Or did you just get what you were given by the...
Oh, no, you just got what you were given there, on there, yeah.
Now, what about the rum ration? Tell me about that.
Well, I didn't draw my top rum for years and years. But
why not?
Well, I just didn't fancy it. I didn't want to. Once you did, if you drank a top, then you'd eat anything. Almost. Well, I might be exaggerating slightly, but not by much. But it was all deadly serious, the rum thing.
How was it issued?
How or when?
Both.
Well, roughly about 11 o'clock, and they pipe up spirits, it was only the chiefs and petty officers were entitled to neat rum. Anything below that, and it was 1 and 3, three lots. Anyway, so the messmen would collect that, usually. But it was all sort of strictly organised. The officer watch was there watching that nobody fiddled a few drops of rum and all this business. And then he'd bring it along to them. And the president of the mess was always there. He was there and he'd watch everybody going up. And you had these measures. It was comical, really. And I can't remember the scientific name now. For when you fill something up and you have a sort of slightly dome.
Meniscus, I think.
That's it. Well, and you can see, especially some of the older ones, making sure, and if they spilled any, dear, you thought the end of the world. Not with all of them, but with quite a lot of them, really. It was a real serious thing, this rum business. And I think that was one of the reasons it partly put me off in the end. I thought, what a load of baloney. Anyway, the messmen would get the rum and the chief president would be there and they'd all line up. You had to be, what was it? Was it 20 or 21? I've forgotten now. 20, I think. Yeah, before you could draw it in any case. And if you didn't get your rum, you got threepence a day. So I had threepence a day for a long time.
And what about just other things? Like, what were the heads like on the resolution?
I can only vaguely remember. It seemed, when I look back on it, it seemed as it took us ages to get to the bathroom from the mess. It probably would. But I can't... Funny enough, I can't picture I can vaguely picture the bathroom, the washing. And of course, when it was if it was a rough sea, there was water coming in the water would come in over the, in between the, there were 6-inch guns, the smaller guns, and the seas would come through there, manage to seep down in all sorts of places you'd think they would never get, but it did. But that was usually only when it was a pretty rough sea. But I honestly can't remember where the heads must have been somewhere near the bathroom. I can picture the heads, funnily enough, on the cauldron. It's one of the few things I can remember about that.
Well, we'll come back
to that. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Was there much water come in from the 6-inch battery?
When it was rough, yeah, it used to... a fair amount. Enough to make it... make you feel miserable. Yeah, not enough to sort of make you think the ship was going down or anything like that.
How deep would it be on the floor?
On the deck? Well, you'd very often get it...
or was it just puddles?
So, not up to that level, but...
halfway up your shoes.
An inch or two, sort of messy...
And slopping around.
Yeah, that's right.